Are you sure it's not a limousine?
Yes, it is a limousine. We can all make believe it's a limousine.
Limousine. Welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast. Oh, it is the penultimate weekend of the Barclays Premier League season. And being that it's such a big weekend, we've actually tracked down Nicky Hollander. You're not going to believe it, ladies and gentlemen. Nicky, so big time. Yes, he's in an Uber right now, on his way to LAX, taking a red eye to NYC. So that makes me think, Nicky, that maybe you're not quite as big time as you're making out you are.
I'm not quite as big time. No, I'm doing a couple of workouts for NBC, and they decided to shuttle me in a beautiful... What car is this? What car is this, mate? It's a Camry. It's a beautiful Camry. I'm making believe there's an extra seat, row of seats behind me, but no, it's all good. It's all good.
All right.
I've been speaking to you guys.
Well, good, Nicky. Just make sure you keep that telephone very close to your mouth and don't disappear off into the nether space. Nate Arborea, we spent yesterday morning together doing Rabble TV relegation breakaway. Was that what it was called?
Relegation Rumble.
It was Rumble.
You have to do the Michael Buffer voice.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Precisely.
It's gone quiet over there.
So, penultimate weekend of the Barclays Premier League. We got Nicky for about 30 minutes. So let's dive straight into it. And don't forget, as always, you can find us on TuneIn's, Stitcher. You can go to good old Twitter. You can find Nicky at Nicky Hollander. You can find Nate at Nate Abrea, I think.
Abrea. At Nate WST. Come on, get with the times.
WST. He is the host of the World Soccer Talk show, 6 to 7, Sirius XM. And you can find me on Twitter at Nick Webster. And don't forget WST Pod, right? All on Twitter. But Nate's far better at doing the plugs now that he's had like 3 weeks of practice than me. So, Nate, I'm going to let you do it in just a sec. But let's get straight to it. Steven Gerrard bids an emotional farewell to Anfield. And would you believe it? They go and cock it up and get completely slaughtered 3-1 by Crystal Palace. I mean, I really don't know where to begin with this one because the smart money would have had Palace winning, really. I mean, it was too much an emotionally charged atmosphere at Anfield for really the last of the Scousers. You know, Liverpool now really has no connection with Liverpool. So let's go to Nicky Hollander first of all. Nicky, what does Steven Gerrard leave behind at Anfield?
I think Steven Gerrard leaves behind the last, probably the last, of the kind of player that was brought up in a city supporting a club and plays for that club, turns down, you know, big money offers to leave because he's a supporter of that club and he has it in his heart. Steven Gerrard, where I don't think he's like the greatest player to ever play for Liverpool, I think he should definitely be probably known as the, I don't know, Mr. Liverpool, or, you know, in terms of he gave his life and soul for that club. He you know, he had great moments like winning the Champions League, the FA Cup. I think that he is an absolute legend. And I think, you know, you got to put him on the par with like kind of Bobby Charlton for Manchester United, Ryan Giggs, all of those players, those iconic players that you just kind of you identify with that one club, and I have massive respect for him, and you know, it's going to be a big loss for Liverpool, but it's time to move on. But like, just give respect to that guy.
Nate, the result itself. I mean, I'm going to say that I called it. I knew Palace would win. I knew it'd be too much. What surprised me was the fact that it would be emotional for Gerrard, but what about the other 10 players on the park? Couldn't they raise their game one last time for their captain?
Well, I love that everyone's making this excuse. I've heard it 1,000 times over the last day, and that is that, oh, it was so emotionally charged, and it was so built up to where it was destined to be a day of failure because everyone was going to be overwhelmed by the Stevie G farewell show. Well, What's interesting about this final score of Palace winning this match 3-1, and you say that you saw Palace winning, and, well, we go back to the last time that these two teams played in the league, and Palace won 3-1. So whether it's at Anfield, whether it's at Selhurst, this year when these two teams went head-to-head, and I'm not talking about standings in the table, I'm not talking about season-long point totals, but the way these two teams matched up this season, Palace were 3-1 to the good, and that seemed to be a consistent kind of estimate of where things were when these two teams went head-to-head. And I'm not going to call it a bogey team because Palace thoroughly outplayed them both times in the league. Liverpool did beat them in the cup one time. Very nice 2-1 comeback victory back in the I think it was the fourth round of the FA Cup. But no, I'm not that surprised by this, and you were sending me all sorts of just grief text messages all throughout this one, Nick, and you said I think at least 4 or 5 times in the course of an hour that Liverpool were absolute shite, and I'd love to have a rebuttal to that, but when I look at those other 10 players out on the pitch, it was a sad way to ring in this Gerrard farewell thing by giving out a performance like this one.
Nicky, yeah. I'm looking at Liverpool right now. In the last few seasons, Carragher's gone, Suarez is gone, Gerrard's gone. It seems to me, who is Liverpool right now? Because, you know, every team has a player that the club truly identifies with. I mean, it's the same at Tottenham, at Arsenal, at United. They have players that you really identify with this club. Who is Liverpool right now in the current Liverpool team?
Well, I mean, I don't think they have one right now. I think it could turn into, you know, Henderson could turn into that guy. But I disagree with you. What club really does have a player at their club that's been there for, you know, you're going Carragher and Steven Gerrard. Those are players that have been there for 15, 16 years. I mean, Spurs have got Harry Kane that they identify with, but he's only been there for like, I mean, he's been there since he's 11, but he's been in the first team for a year. I mean, Arsenal don't have anyone, really. I mean, who do they have? Jack Wilshere is not playing at the moment. Man United, okay, they got Wayne Rooney. I mean, it's like not that many teams do have players that are there for that long. So I don't think there is a Mr. Liverpool at the moment. I would definitely say that, again, Liverpool are a young team. I very much believe in Brendan Rodgers, and I think that with young players, you can't get top four anymore. Once that objective is gone, it's very hard to kind of get them up again. They're not really, it's hard for them. It's a long season. And yes, I think it's difficult. They've lost Suarez. They're going to lose Stevie G now. They're definitely going to try and they're going to have to find a talisman. And they're going to probably have to do that like very kind of use cunning means, because they're not going to be able to outspend anybody. They're not going to be able to attract people to live in Liverpool, because nobody wants to live in Liverpool. So they're basically going to have to figure out a way through some really good transfers to find that player that's going to be their new talisman. I hope they do, and they play some great football when they do. And you know, it's coming to the end of the season for one of the youngest teams in the league. Takeaways DBG, and that's what you get there. That's a 3-1 defeat. But on the other hand, Crystal Palace look fantastic, and I think that Bolasie winger, if he went to Spurs, I would be so happy. That guy is an absolute terror on the wing. I think if you're not at it with Crystal Palace, they will get at you. And just look at Newcastle now. They are one step away from relegation, getting rid of Alan Pardew, and Crystal Palace are heading in the other direction. I really think that Newcastle United fans need to look at themselves in the mirror and say, you know what, it's Mike Ashley you want to get rid of,
the fans can't get rid of the owners. But let's keep this talk on Liverpool for just a second. And you mentioned Brendan Rodgers, so I'll send this one to Nate. He's had a free pass this year. For some reason, the owners in Boston have said, yes, we're happy with him, even though there can be no denying Liverpool have gone backwards. You can't go from runners-up in the table to Champions League football to now maybe scratching around in the Europa League, even if they fancy it. If Liverpool have a poor start to next season, Nate, will these owners in Boston be forced to make a move, or will they keep going with this project? And where is this project going?
I'll try to answer those questions in order. Based on the current climate of patience with managers from owners around the Premier League. We'll just focus on England. Yes, if they start the way that they started this season, if they do that next season, they come out and we're talking bottom half of the table, which is where Liverpool were, you know, a few months into the season, and that joke of a start, that they were only kept in this thing by the fact that it was a down year in the Premier League as a whole. If that type of start comes next year, yeah, I think there's a distinct possibility that that he could be gone mid-season. Now, as far as objectives next year, if they don't finish in the top four at the end of the season, I think he's gone. I hope that he's gone. And I've been someone advocating him staying for another year because I believe that his project, as you called it, is something that is, I don't want to say well underway because it had this massive hiccup this season, but there were a number of things that derailed it that were out of his control. And I do think there are certain overrated qualities about him as a manager and things that he was heralded for last year that had to do a lot with fortune favoring him throughout the season. And the number one thing being Daniel Sturridge's health, which during that run that should have ended in a Premier League title, you recall having the top two goal scorers in the entire league all season up top together. And this year, yeah, we've talked all about Suarez, but the Sturridge injury situation this year being the polar opposite. So yeah, he had a lot of things going against him this season. I hope he gets one more chance. If he doesn't finish in the top four, he's gone. If they start the way they started this season, I think he's gone as well.
Can I just add one point to that though, Nate? Here's the thing. This season, mate, they have had no Suarez, that was through no fault of Brendan Rodgers, that he lost his absolute best. He's lost the third best player in the world. He's lost Sturridge for like a big part of this season. And Sterling is kind of wanting to leave and is kind of digging his heels in. I think you can't judge, like, it's so hard to judge that he has them playing in a great style of football, a great brand of football. But he's had the rug pulled out from under him this season. I think you've got to he's going to have to rebuild again. Just the same, you know, I know it'll go back to my club, but just the same as Spurs had to do after Gareth Bale. He's lost too much. You cannot, you got to judge him on the style of football he tries to get his teams to play. And he does brilliantly. You just have to realize that he has to restart his project because he's lost probably Sterling as well now. So he's kind of lost two of his best players. He's going to have lost Stevie G. He's the guy you want, but you have to kind of give him a whole clean slate and say, we understand we pulled, everything's kind of been taken from underneath you, and go again, rebuild this again, you know what I mean?
But Nicky, you know, absolutely, I do agree, and I have to say, I like you saying the exact same things that I say, but you say it with a prettier tone. So anytime we can do this, please do. By the way, Mr. Webster, I'd love to get your thoughts on this. He essentially just compared Gareth Bale to Luis Suarez, and I would say that
only in this way, Nate. That when Gareth Bale was sold, he was considered the third best player in the world, and so was Suarez. What happened is Gareth Bale was realized that when you go to Barcelona, when you go to Real Madrid, everything doesn't flow through you as it does at Spurs. And it's much harder to be, you know, to be in that really big pond
to
down
be
there.
The man. I mean, my thing is this, you know, you both laud Brendan Rodgers for playing attractive football. And yeah, I give him plaudits for playing attractive football. But unfortunately, attractive football does not mean anything in a business that is predicated solely on one thing: results.
I agree with you, Nick. But here's the deal. If that's what the owners want, then they've got to give him the same kind of money that Manchester City and Chelsea have. But that's the only way it's going to happen.
Well, Liverpool don't have that kind of money, so
then they can't.
Well, then they're a fifth place team.
They're a fifth place team, yes. Yeah. So all this ambition and dreams of competing for the championship and playing in the Champions League, it's a pipe dream because currently Liverpool are not in a financial position to do
Let's
that.
Let's just say that them finishing second was an absolute insanely ridiculous achievement because they should not have finished anywhere near second with the money outlay they did. If you look at the outlay of money this year, everybody has finished in the top five have finished in exactly the order that they have spent, except Chelsea and Man United flipped. If you take all the top five, Man United with the top spenders and Chelsea with the fourth top spenders, those two flip, but everybody else is finishing exactly in the how much money they spent. In fact, the top six, put Spurs in there as well. Everyone has finished where they spent.
Money doesn't lie. I know you've got to get a plane, Nicky, so I want to get straight to Jake Livermore. And I'm sure you probably know him for his Tottenham days. Yeah. Obviously, a big blow to Hull City. Jake Livermore getting suspended for the rest of the season due to failing a drugs test. Cocaine was the drug of choice. Hull then went on to lose. Steve Bruce obviously not blaming that loss against Tottenham for Jake Livermore suspension. But talk to me a little bit about Jake Livermore. I mean, supposedly the player is absolutely devastated that he's failed a drugs test. Well, I'm not sure how he can be devastated when obviously he's done a line or two.
Well, you can still do the crime and be devastated that, you know,
you got caught
when you get caught. Basically.
I mean, it's like when you go home and you shag your girlfriend and you give her a case of VD and you say, I've got it off a toilet seat, right?
Well, listen, I just think, here's the thing. I feel very sorry for the guy. When he was at Spurs, I mean, he was, I watched him train a lot and I kept on going. And it was almost before he'd broken into, like, had his little time in the first team. And he's an amazingly talented player. I mean, he really is. I thought he could have kicked on. I know he kind of dropped a little level to go to Hull, but like he's a really good player, and it's never good when somebody does that. Look, they're young, they're immature, they've got money, and they're kind of looking for that high that they get on the field that they can't always get in the rest of life. Hopefully, this is a great learning kind of experience for him. Look, just remember, Suarez bit somebody twice and is now absolutely lying it up.
Right, so what's worse now, biting somebody or doing drugs, okay? One harms another person, one harms yourself. I mean, we're getting into almost, spirituality lessons here. You know, which one really damages the world more, Nicky?
Right, no, exactly. I actually think, obviously, biting somebody else because they're not really a willing participant in that event. But I would say that doing cocaine, obviously, it's like, you're missing something in your life and you're kind of searching for it. And hopefully the people around him need to kind of get hold of him and say, dude, you got a great opportunity here to like make a life for yourself and make a name for yourself in football. And you got to figure it out. And I'm guessing that Steve Bruce is, just seeing interviews with him and stuff, is probably a good guy to have because he tells you his mind and he doesn't sugarcoat it. So maybe he's around the right manager for somebody with that kind of an issue.
Well, Bruce would be the worst man to do cocaine with because, I mean, his nose is so big. I mean, he'd hog all of it. And like
I don't know, his nose has been broken so many times. It's probably got, little like valleys and peaks in there that it will never get out of. It's probably constantly high.
I don't know how you're ever going to keep track of the stuff. You're going to lose all your supply. But in regards to this lad, it's just like the great Rodney Dangerfield said. You know, I don't like cocaine. I don't do cocaine. I just like the way it smells. And that was, perhaps an issue here.
The one I want to bring up is we all remember Mutu, who, the Chelsea player. And
who needs Wayne Rooney when we've got Mutu?
And his suspension for cocaine use and the £13 million he supposedly owes Chelsea. I mean, he managed to get his career back on track, but he got his career back on track because he left the Premier League. Nicky, do you think, is Jake Livermore, is he the type of lad that can go and play in Europe where they might be a little bit forgiving of his actions?
Maybe, but I mean, he's... I feel like it's one mistake. I think, hopping off abroad, where could he really go? And kind of, I guess he could go to the French League or the German League, but it's like his game is very suited for the Premier League. He's big, he's strong, he's got technique. I think that he needs to, don't run away from your problems, go deal with your problems. You know what I mean? Running to Europe and doing more cocaine but not getting reported on it is not going to be very good for him.
You're saying he's big, he's strong. He snorts it by the pound, Jake Livermore.
Right,
Jake
exactly. Livermore.
Hey, look! Framed picture on my wall of Robbie Fowler in 1999 dropping to his knees in front of the Everton supporters in the away section at Anfield, the Merseyside Derby, and dropping and mocking, snorting the line of coke as McManaman tries to pull him back up. I remember being in Liverpool when Fowler dropped down and did that. And the way Robbie Fowler, the example, and I say this, you're going to laugh at me, but the example that is defeating your own problems and battling your own demons and doing it with sarcasm sarcasm and a bit of humor. Yeah, the bit of humor might get you into a little bit of trouble. But you look at this background of Fowler's celebrations when people would just give him so much grief, and in such a high-profile British tabloid culture when it comes to these players and drug problems. That's why I'll always have the utmost respect for the way Robbie Fowler responded to everyone giving him so much grief for it. Drop down, snort the line. Run around when he scored the goal for Man City against Everton and do the smackhead celebration. Give it back to him. Make people laugh. We love you, Robbie. God. Well,
Gerard Houllier was the clown. What did he say? He was pretending to eat grass. Thank you, Gerard Houllier. Yes, I think, Gerard Houllier, you may have been smoking grass coming up with that suggestion. So for Hull City, I think many of us here in the media would love to see Hull stay up. But three losses on the bounce. The one last week to Burnley, an absolute killer. That was the game that they had to win. They really didn't create too many chances at Tottenham. So now they are really needing some help. Their last game of the season at home to Manchester United, who probably still need to... they're still thinking about third place and having not to go through the rigmarole of qualifying in a playoff during the Champions League. So it's looking very bleak for Hull. Let's quickly talk about Tottenham, Nicky. Last week they were accused of having the deck chairs out, the flip-flops on and the suntan lotion. Europa League football, are they interested in this? Because Southampton can still take it from them.
Well, are they interested in it? I think, yes, they are. I think all teams want Europe. You have to realise that... It's a way into the Champions League, number one. It's European football. You play on a stage that's, you know, once you get to the quarters and semis and final, it's a stage that, you know, the Europe is watching. I think it's a way to attract players. It's a way to gain experience in European football. So, yes, I think the whole club wants it. Will they get it? I think, yes. I think, you know, I think Southampton will not win on the last game of the season because they've got Man City. I think Liverpool and Spurs will fight out to see who doesn't have to qualify, who's going to finish fifth. And, of course, Arsenal will win the FA Cup. So that will mean that all Southampton, Spurs and Liverpool will get that Europa place. Whether they want it or not, you know, like I say, they do. But it's not the number one prize they were all going for.
A massive, massive booby prize. So we were talking about Newcastle United. Nate and I were covering that game for our relegation breakaway against QPR. Newcastle took the lead and QPR came roaring back and fair with an absolute cracker and a game that didn't really matter to QPR. They were just playing for pride. Newcastle United playing for their premiership futures. And we keep on talking about, you know, John Carver and you know, the man who would love to eat himself, the Crystal Palace manager. But it all comes down to Mike Ashley, doesn't it? And,
yeah.
You know, we...
You know, my feeling on this one, Nick, is what as I was just saying before, is the problem is it's the Newcastle fans got at the wrong person, because what they didn't realise is Alan Pardew was punching above his weight every year, getting the rug pulled out from underneath him. Mike Ashley was selling everything from, like, the best player to the, you know, the guy making the sandwiches. And he's still bringing in different people, scouting, finding him, having him playing good football, getting him where they shouldn't be in the league. And they start calling for his head. I was like, Newcastle fans had lost the plot. They needed to keep on trying to get rid of the person they needed to get rid of, which was Mike Ashley, and realised that, actually... You know, the manager, Alan Pardew,
was doing wonders.
But,
Nicky, the problem
wonders.
Is this, Nicky. Fans cannot get rid of owners. It just doesn't happen like that. I mean, what are they going to do? Are they going to club together to buy Mike Ashley out? That's never going to happen. No one's got two pence to rub together up in Newcastle.
No, but of course, you just make him as unwelcome as he can. And I think if he got the right amount of money, he's going to sell it. I mean, you know, the problem
is... Yeah, but you can't sell a club that's in the Championship, mate.
No, exactly. But I just think that, honestly, turning on Pardew, he was there. He was the ally. He had them playing good football even. I mean, like, yes, they had some bad results, but they went on that run in the middle of the season where they couldn't stop winning. I mean, like, I'm telling you right now that they went after the wrong guy. They either got to accept that they can't get Mike Ashley out, but they have to realize that Alan Pardew was a absolutely amazing manager who was doing things that he had no right to do with absolutely no backing from anybody.
Nate, let me ask you this.
You need a Ricola or something.
Yeah, I need a refill, actually. Newcastle fans, they have, I mean, the choices are very limited. One, the choice is they stop going. Well, that's never going to happen because these people love football more than life itself.
There's nothing else to do in Newcastle.
There's
either.
Nothing else to do. So if they can't stop going, how can they send a message to Mike Ashley that it's no longer acceptable what he's doing, not to his club, because he's just a wanker, but to their club?
Well, first off, there is the famed Discovery Museum in Newcastle. Fantastic place. Check out the Discovery Museum if you're ever in Newcastle upon Tyne. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant place. The Lang Art Gallery. You can also check out the Lang Art Gallery if you're ever finding yourself for some reason in Newcastle. There's nothing they can do. It's a catch-22 situation in every way, shape, and form, and that's what's so sad about it. And you have a vile creature that refuses to sell. And every logical thing would tell you that, hey, dude, it's time to sell. And he just refuses to do it because it's this sort of strange vendetta against the world and his when every supporter – look, the man's vile, but he's not naive. Everyone has this thing, he's naive. No. No one gets that rich with, you know, being completely ignorant. And the man knows that everyone hates him. And it's almost as if he embraces this horrifying villain-like character and that whole facade that you, me, and Bertie talked about last week about the when he was first kind of coming to prominence with Newcastle and he would drink a pint with the supporters and be in the middle of a section behind the goal after a late winner and go crazy with the fans. It was all a complete facade. It was a complete joke. The man is a villain, and sadly, he has this firm grip over the club, and no one can take it because his asking price is going to be outrageous. I hope they get relegated because then we're talking – if they get relegated, it's conceivable that there's another decade of Mike Ashley. Well,
Nicky's about to go through security. Nicky, we didn't get you last week. Chelsea are the champions. I know it's a big switch from getting rid of Ashley, but I want to get your thoughts very quickly. Chelsea champions, worthy in your eyes?
Well, worthy. Nah, here's the thing. Yes, they're champions, and I want to congratulate all the long-term Chelsea fans out there who stuck behind, you know, stuck with them when they were, you know, had like Nigel Spackman and all those players, but there's not many of them. I would say that they basically, Mourinho did what he always does, which is spend, you know, in the top two of money in the Premier League and then play this cynical brand of football that says, you know what, we're not going to try and beat the other team. We're going to try and let the other team beat itself. And it was really, you know, it was a really, this is going to be one of the most forgettable Premier League titles, I think, ever. He's managed to turn a group of, you know, they've got some real skillful, great players in there. And he's really managed to turn them into a wall of 11, basically, who kind of hit you on the breakaway. So, you know what? To me, if you want to look at this season, what I'm going to take out of it is Southampton, Ronald Koeman, the way he kind of bought wisely and actually managed to stabilize a club that was like, you know, kind of like swaying from one, could have gone anywhere. I think Swansea City have done phenomenal. And I think Crystal Palace, I think those three clubs for me have done better than anyone else in this season. And they should take the most credit for it, in my opinion.
Before we let you go, Nicky, talk to us about Rebecca Lowe. Would you shag her?
Well, she's an MVC, so let's just say I give her a nice hug, and she's a great presenter.
So, what are you doing for NBC over the next couple of days?
I'm going down there. We're going to film a couple of workouts for NBC Sports in the morning. I'm going to do some press stuff at 30 Rock to promote RadiusFitness.com. Go check it out. My workouts there, and then I'm coming home because my football players will be getting the English Premier League players will be coming out to train with me in about 2 or 3 weeks. So maybe we'll get one or two of them on the show over June if we're going to do one or two specials.
And Nicky, we know you love to name drop. So could you name drop, please?
Who's coming out? Well, I'm definitely going to be working with Solomon Kalou, Chinedu Abasi from the Bundesliga. And then I've got a couple of other ones who are in the pipelines from one from Spurs and one from Chelsea. So I can't tell you right yet, but let's maybe see if we get him on the show.
And I know you've worked with Tom Huddlestone in the past. I know you're walking through security. Rate his season. Obviously, Hull, you know, we just talked about them. They're on the verge of possibly getting relegated. But how do you think Tom's done? I mean, because he seems to have, you know, played in fits and starts.
Yeah, I think Tom has got, like, absolute a great footballing brain. I think his technique of striking a ball, his first touch, all of it is really great. Again, I think one thing with Tom is his mobility. I think that.
Well, isn't that what he hires you for?
Yeah, well, exactly. But I mean, like, he's a big guy. He's a big guy, so he's got to kind of work on it. So, but like, I think that's his one thing. I think if he can keep on doing that and keep on improving his game, but working on his kind of like mobility and stuff like that, I think he's a Premier League midfield player. I'm not saying he's the best. He's going to be the best, but I think he could play for a top 10 club for sure.
Nicky Hollander, always a pleasure. Hopefully we'll have you on next week when you're not rushing off to the airport.
All right. Good luck, boys. Take care, Nate.
Love ya.
Bye, mate.
Nate, West Ham United, Everton. Lukaku with a dramatic late winner and possibly, most definitely, the final nail in the coffin for big Sam Allardyce. And I must admit, I feel really bad for Sam Allardyce. I think he's done a remarkable job at West Ham. They're currently in 11th place. And if you can tell me that West Ham United aren't an 11th place team, I'll call you a Dutchman's uncle, because that seems to be the place in the table where they should be. And the reason they're there is because they had an exceptional start to the season. They've certainly tailed off. But I'm not surprised they've tailed off with the amount of abuse that Sam Allardyce was getting, with the turmoil within the club about moving to the Olympic Stadium and leaving their longtime home of Upton Park. That certainly can't be helping. And the fact that Sam Allardyce has been given very, very little money to turn over this squad and buy some high-profile players. But he is going to get sacked.
Yeah, he's getting the sack, yeah. Fred Flintstone is no more at Upton Park or the Olympic Stadium, wherever they want to play their football. When I look at this result and I look at these two teams, it's incredible. And I wish Birdie was here, because Birdie can second this, that if West Ham's season would have been reversed, they're an 11th place team at best. That roster, that average 11, that everything about them with glimmers of brilliance and spells of awfulness. They are an 11th place side through and through. They started in dreamland, and they were playing some outstanding football. They were playing some electrifying football. Then came Andy Carroll returning to the fold. And I'm not going to put all of the blame or say that was the pivotal turning point, but Andy Carroll's return to the West Ham squad this year, it took away a lot of the creative stuff and the flow that we were seeing from Sako and Valencia, from a number of other players as well early on in the season. And so West Ham slowly began to dip, and they end the season in dreadful form, just absolutely dreadful, really since the new year. And they end up right where they should be. Look at the team who wins this match. You got Everton, that are pretty much at best maybe a 9th place team when you rank their roster and you rank their usual 11 against every other team in the Premier League this season, and they start in this horrendous form, just absolutely dreadful. Everton around the drop zone, putting all of their competitive eggs in the Europa League basket, and then suddenly they get knocked out of the Europa League. They play fantastic football to close the season, and look at these two teams. They talk about the bookends. They come together, both 37 matches played. They're even on exactly 47 points. These two teams are so similar in so many ways. It's just that their form was flip-flopped throughout the season.
Well, it's gonna be a shame to see the demise of Sam Allardyce. I've always found him to be a forthright and forward-thinking manager. I mean, this was the guy when he was at Bolton. He was bringing in Prozone, yoga for athletes. I mean, he's really cutting edge when it comes to trying to get the best out of his team. I think he's been given a rough rough deal there at Upton Park. Definitely not getting the backing of the owners when it was required. And I think he'll still get a job, whether it be in the Championship or the Premiership. Who will know? But someone's going to take a punt on Big Sam. Like we said, he's never been relegated. And that must mean something in today's day and age. Burnley, Stoke City, absolutely nothing to talk about from this game other than the fact that 18,636 mugs paid money to go watch it. Stoke in ninth place, Burnley already relegated. So the other 0-0 scoreline of the weekend was the match that we did, Nate. Sunderland and Leicester City. The Stadium of Light, 46,705 on hand to see this one. And incredibly, Leicester City, who were dead and buried, 7 weeks ago, maybe 8 weeks ago at best, have survived. And as Nate was ending the broadcast, I gave it the... Right, incredible, the great escape, and they just kept on playing great football. We kind of said after 5 minutes of this game that it was a bang to rights 0-0 draw,
and
the fix was in, right? Because Sunderland on 37 points, goal difference minus 20, they have two games left. Hull, 34 points, goal difference minus 18. So Sunderland really only need a point, and they know that Hull have to beat Manchester United. So you'd have to say that Sunderland probably safer than Newcastle. But let's talk about Leicester City, and let's talk about our favourite manager, Nigel Pearson. Kasper Schmeichel, the goalkeeper and son of the great Dane Peter Schmeichel, has come out and said that Nigel Pearson should be named the manager of the year. And I, for one, I'm going to agree with him, because what Nigel Pearson has done, I don't think we've ever seen achieved in the Premiership before. For a manager to be so hammered from pillar to pillar, to be on the verge. Well, he did get sacked, didn't he? He got sacked after the wrestle on the touchline in the afternoon, the Saturday afternoon, and he was reinstated on the Monday, I believe, although the club said they never officially sacked him. This is a man who goes into press conferences, and if you're a reporter, you better know some self-defense, because he doesn't take mugs gladly. What do you make of Kasper Schmeichel and his claim that Nigel Pearson should be manager of the year?
I'll say this. Leicester City pulling off what they pulled off is more impressive than Chelsea winning the title. And so, and that's just a fact. And so therefore, as far as the man at the helm, I'm far more impressed with what Nigel Pearson has done than Jose Mourinho. And you know me, Nick, I'm not a Jose Mourinho hater. Winning comes before everything, and Jose Mourinho is a winner through and through. But Chelsea, with that squad and that style of football going for them for the latter part of the season, it wasn't anything that impressive, and I think actually a few other managers could have guided Chelsea to the title. I don't think there's too many other managers, and we talk about manager of the year, this is an important way to kind of think of it. I don't think there's too many other skippers in the entire world, too many other people that could have captained that ship and led it out of not only the relegation zone, but they spent the better part of 8 months in 20th place. I mean, we're talking the doormat of the league, who then won four matches on the trot. Leicester City won four games on the trot for the first time in the top flight since 1966. They did it while they were a last-place team, and they climbed out of this impossible hole. And look, I've said this before, and I'll just hammer it home one last time. The number one most important thing as a football manager, and this is whether you coach high school, this is whether you coach anything here in America at the youth level, you coach in the Premier League, you coach a national team, whatever it may be, having the players on your side comes before everything. When they want to play for you, you are going to get the best out of them, and you never do anything that jeopardizes that. And you never do anything that puts that into question. And Nigel Pearson may come across as psychotic, but it's all calculated, and it all comes from the mindset that my players come before anything. And if any of you members of the press are going to say a bad word about him, hey, I'm going to wring your neck. I'm going to look like I'm going to butt you. I'm going to come out there and I'm going to be scary because I have got my players back. And what do you know? It pays off in the end. They never, ever, ever give up. And Leicester have survived. I absolutely love it.
Leicester City currently third in the club form guide last six. That includes four wins, just a one loss and a tie. They gained 13 points. In fourth place in the current form list, a certain Sunderland. Yes, I think many of you would probably not have guessed that. That's three wins, two ties, and just a one loss. 11 points for Dick Advocaato. Their two remaining games, and this is interesting. Ordinarily, you would say Sunderland are down because on Wednesday they are away to Arsenal, and on Sunday they are away to Chelsea. But incredibly, Arsenal and Chelsea, well, Arsenal may have something to play for. Yeah, I mean, do they have something to play for?
Technically, it's second place is not officially gone. City could lose on the final day, and Arsenal could win two matches and pick up 6 points and get into that second place spot and not have to qualify for the Champions League.
I think Arsenal are probably more afraid of dropping into that fourth place spot. If they get a tie, this is the scenario I'm thinking. I reckon they draw against Sunderland on Wednesday night. That would give them 72 points. Their goal difference is far superior to Manchester United. They lock up third, and Sunderland somehow survive.
Are you going to call out the fix from Sunderland that it was a two-match project that they went into, and they were going to scrape out nil-nil draws with Leicester and with Arsenal to secure safety and work out a backroom deal? Are you calling a double game fix?
I don't know if I'm cool. I certainly think that Saturday's game against Leicester, there may have been some handshaking before the game in the tunnel. A couple of winks may have been swabbed, a couple of nods, and certainly a couple of pints after the game. The Arsenal matchup, the reason I'm thinking that Arsenal are not going to be going full bore on this is because they do have the FA Cup. They are the holders. It's very important for Arsene Wenger to win silverware. And I just don't see Arsenal players putting themselves in the line of fire. Arsenal currently fifth place in the club form guide. Just a one loss, three wins, two ties, 11 points, the same as Sunderland. But I just think Sunderland, they found a way to do it last year, didn't they? I mean, they went on that incredible run where they won four on the bounce. They even beat a Jose Mourinho team at Stamford Bridge, his only loss in the Barclays Premier League in his entire time in England. I just think that Sunderland somehow are going to pull this one out, and it's going to come down to Hull and Newcastle.
I absolutely agree. And wouldn't it be something if Newcastle, who have West Ham on the final day, if in the battle of Alan Pardew's two former clubs, if Newcastle lose that one out, West Ham and Big Sam wants to go out with a bang and play whatever type of football he wants to play, and they were to beat Newcastle and Hull with a mighty Manchester United task to deal with, albeit at home, if Hull were able to get 3 points, Newcastle lose, and it would be Newcastle dropping right in to 18th place and going down. Would you believe it?
Well, currently West Ham and Newcastle in the bottom three in club form last six games. Other results from the Premier League: Southampton absolutely demolishing Aston Villa, and that goes to show how fatal it is to take one's eye off the ball. Aston Villa, the cup finalists, they'll play Arsenal in a couple of weeks. Obviously, thinking about that Wembley date, knowing that they are now safe, Southampton taking full advantage. Mane with a hat-trick. Even Shane Long started scoring, and Pella got one. A 6-1 demolishing. Good result for Southampton as they try and avoid the Europa League. Swansea City, they got tonked 4-2 by Manchester City. Yaya Toure with a couple. James Milner, Boney in the last minute of the game. Sigurdsson and Gomez actually making a bit of a fist of it. The talking point from this one really was Yaya Toure, Nate, and the fact that, you know, his agent is, well, he's 90%, he's gone. Obviously, his agent is a piece of work. Do you know if Yaya got the birthday cake this year?
I doubt he got the birthday cake because I'd put him at 99% gone. And I know a lot of those factors, those numbers, the way people throw them out there, it has to do with developing a little bit of buzz. And the agent, talk about calculated, he knows what he's doing every time he stirs up any little bit of controversy. But with all that being said, I think Yaya's gone from Manchester City. I think Yaya's gone from the Premier League. I don't know where he'll go, but I don't see him playing for Manchester City. I mean that, and it's a shame because if this were as little as 5 years ago, not even joking, 5 years ago, not just going to go back to the 90s or say, oh, in the good old days of football in the 70s and 80s. No, as little as 5 years ago, that would be outrageous to say that, oh, after a little bit of drama, he has to go. This day and age that we're in right now, we talk about this with managers all the time in the ADD age of football and what the economics has done to this thing. Yaya Toure in this modern climate with this stuff going on and the slump in form and Man City with the most weak, tame, lame title defense in modern Premier League history, I think Yaya is not going to be able to recover from this mentally. And I think he is gone. I think he's going to go to Spain or Italy if I had to throw out my hunch for that one. And just real quickly to go back to that other game, the Southampton thumping of Aston Villa, we should point out Mane with his hat trick in the course of 3 minutes breaking, sadly, brought up Robbie Fowler earlier, breaking Robbie Fowler's Premier League record for the fastest hat trick in league history.
That is why Nate Abaraya is the host of the World Soccer Talk radio show, weeknight 6 to 7 on the Sports Byline, Sirius XM. The man knows his football. So don't forget, you can also tweet him and tweet me at World Soccer Talk, hashtag WSTPod. Subscribe via Stitcher, TuneIn, and iTunes. Swansea City, their bad luck has been that last week we couldn't cover them because they were playing on Monday. And of course, they go to the Emirates and put together one of the best results of the season, beating Arsenal, who had been flying. Gary Monk, manager of the year material, certainly has done an unbelievable job for the Swans, who are currently in eighth place. So Europa League football won't be going to Swansea this year, but still, Gary Monk, I mean, it's his first full season of management, Nate.
Yeah, and I like, actually, in regards to the Arsenal situation, Wenger has never beat Gary Monk, and Gary Monk has twice defeated Arsene Wenger. So I love head-to-head matchups in terms of managers. And so, no, I think what Swansea have done this season has been commendable. It's been courageous. However, it saddens me that this season, and based on, again, it all comes back to the dollars. Always the effing dollars. I feel like Joe Pesci in Casino right now, because it always does come back to the effing dollars. And if Swansea didn't have to sell their leading goal scorer and a man who was playing some of the best forward, some of the best true striker football in the Premier League this season, if they didn't have to sell him based on shit, gotta get as much as we can right now because we're cash strapped like everybody else that can't be in that top four of multi-billionaire owner owned clubs, and so therefore we gotta sell Boney when we can get top dollar for it, so we gotta sell him now, even though having him on this team I easily could have seen. I mean, look at the difference. Look at Liverpool in fifth place on 62, Swansea in eighth on 56. I mean, if you're going to tell me that Wilfred Bony couldn't have made 6 points difference, that's two matches, then you're crazy. And I think Swansea actually, if they would have been able to keep him, and I know it's a ridiculous hypothetical to some, but if they would have been able to, I think they easily could have finished in fifth place and dare I say it, even competed for a European spot. That's just how good, for a Champions League spot. That's just how good Bony was. And it's a shame that he had to go, but still good stuff from Gary Monk and Swansea this season.
Well, you say it was a shame he had to go. It was a shame he had to go to Manchester City. If you think about your club, Liverpool, with the trials and tribulations with Suarez and Sturridge, perhaps that would have been a better home than a certain Mario Balotelli. Tomorrow, West Brom take on the champions Chelsea in a game that has absolutely no interest whatsoever. So that leaves us with one last game to review. Back in the old days, this would have been a title decider. Manchester United taking on Arsenal from Old Trafford. Not a bad game of football, but Not a great game of football either. It took Arsenal a full 45 minutes to get out of gear. In fact, they didn't have a shot on goal, according to NBC, in the first 45 minutes. The first time they hadn't had a shot on goal since 2004. Who the hell keeps all these stats? I have no idea. So, as you can imagine, a bit of a dull game. Certainly picked up a little bit in the second half. But still lots of work for Louis van Gaal to do. In terms of this Manchester United scene, they are certainly not the finished article, and they could be losing their goalkeeper, David De Gea. Rumours has it that he was on a flight to Madrid during the midweek, but that was just because Van Gaal had decided to give him a couple of days off. But I've seen in the past, when Real Madrid want a player, Real Madrid get that player. Have we seen the last of David De Gea in the Premier League, Nate? And how much of a loss will losing this fantastic young Spaniard be to Manchester United?
If you're a fan of 19 teams in the Premier League or whatever three new teams come in other than Manchester United, then you are most definitely hoping that David De Gea ends up in a Real Madrid uniform, because you cannot underestimate the importance of a fantastic keeper. And we made references to the great Peter Schmeichel. And you recall during the treble season for Manchester United back in 99, the saves that Schmeichel made in all three competitions, in particular in the FA Cup run that year and in the Champions League. Saves that Schmeichel made were the difference between winning trophies and not winning trophies. Now, I know that Man United obviously aren't going to win a trophy this year, but David De Gea won them games. And next year with Manchester United, and call it a project, call it a work in progress, it's a damn good one. And by the way, this story just breaking out of England over the last couple of days, that rumor has it, and pretty sure rumor, is that an oxymoron if you ever heard one, that Louis van Gaal is going to get £150 million guaranteed to go spend. That's not including any sale of any player. He's going to get £150 million to go out and continue to construct for this project. But you can buy so many different things, and there's so many different people who would say that, David De Gea is not that important. One man is not the difference. And look, I know it's a goalkeeper, and I'm about to compare a goalkeeper to a field player, but I go back to Liverpool and people never truly appreciating just how brilliant Luis Suarez was in 2013, 2014. Luis Suarez, in terms of form that season, was the best player on planet Earth. David De Gea this year has been, without a doubt, the best goalkeeper on planet Earth. And you can't put a price on that. And if you want to win a Premier League title, you want to make some noise in Europe, It's a nice thing to have for you, the best in the world between the sticks. And if Man United were smart, they'd do everything they could to hang on to David De Gea.
Well, you mentioned how many points a player would be worth, and I'm gonna go way back on you. In 1978, Brian Clough broke the world record for signing a keeper when he paid, I believe, Leicester City £350,000 for Peter Shilton. And yeah, I mean, he really had to go to the mats with the Forest board to pay that kind of money, because the Forest board were like, well, he's just a keeper, you know. The keepers don't go for that kind of money. And Brian Clough said that Peter Shilton was worth 10 points, 10 extra points a season. And this was back in the day when it was 2 points for a win. So we're talking 20 points. I mean, sorry, 10 points. So add another 10, 20 points. That would make Manchester United champions in terms of how many points extra David De Gea is worth. So I think if United lose De Gea, you know, Victor Valdez is a fine keeper, but I think Valdez is more towards the tail end of his career than,
you know, it's really funny, Nick, because for Manchester United fans listening to this, and Man United fans that hopefully have been around, at least let me hope you jumped on the bandwagon in the late 90s, so you're able to at least remember this. But when Peter Schmeichel left Manchester United, there was this string of subpar goalkeepers that came in that were extremely detrimental to the cause, where many of the same foundations were out there on the field. I mean, many of those famous names of that glory late 90s, early 2000s Man United squad, they were all still there. The only difference was the goalkeeper. And you remember the likes of Mark Bosnich, and it's so funny that you brought up Valdez. And Valdez, for me, reminds me so much of when Fabian Barthez became the goalkeeper for Manchester United. And I mean, similar body build, similar tail ends of very glorious careers at other clubs. And Barthez would be to De Gea, I mean, pardon me, Valdez would be to De Gea what Barthez was to Schmeichel in many ways. And I don't think enough people realize just how brilliant David De Gea has been, not just this season. I remember even a few years ago when I first saw him in 2011. It was the 1-1 game where Suarez said a very, very inappropriate thing to Patrice Evra, as you may recall. And I'll never forget, that was my real introduction to David De Gea. It was that 1-1 match at Anfield back in 2011. And I said it then. I said, this guy has the makings of one of the best in the world. And he is the best goalkeeper in the world right now. And again, I if they're smart, they'll do whatever it takes to keep him, including maybe dipping in to some of that £150 million nice little kitty that Van Gaal's going to get. If they were smart, they'd cut off some of that and make sure they keep De Gea.
Lob him a couple of million. Manchester United back in the Champions League. Will they be in the playoff round, or will they go directly into the group stages? We will find out over the next 7 days. For Arsenal, a good point at Manchester United, a good point at Old Trafford. Second time they've gone there this season and remained unbeaten. They won 2-1 in the FA Cup. And that's where they will be going next after taking care of Sunderland in the Premier League. For Arsenal, good to see Jack Wilshere back. But yeah, a very anemic first half display. I'm sure they got a rocket from a certain Frenchman, Arsene Wenger, in the dressing room, which certainly perked them up in the second half. But really not too much to say about Arsenal. If we're going to put a bow on this week, what's it going to be, Mr. Nate Aburea?
It's got to be Leicester City. It's got to be Leicester City. I mean, just smiles aplenty all over the Midlands, all over the world for people that jumped on board. There were actually thousands of people that jumped on board around the world for good reason. This was a good bandwagon to jump on. I know I always give people a lot of grief for jumping on bandwagons when it comes to football, but this was a great one to jump on, and it was a fantastic story, and it exemplified a lot of things that are right with football, and even in this modern age where so many things are wrong with the game we love at a high level, this exhibited so many things that were right about football. And we joked about this quite a bit, but in this year in the Premier League, which Nicky Hollander so eloquently labeled as one of the most forgettable seasons as a whole ever, in not only just the Premier League, but the old First Division included. I mean, this was one of the most down years in league history, and within that, thank God for Leicester City, because in my opinion, they stole the show at the end. And seeing them even in this dry nil-nil, which we had the great privilege of commentating for our friends at Rabble TV, it was beautiful to see the smiles on the supporters' faces, on the players' faces, and most of all, that little bit of a smile that we got from Nigel Pearson, because he pulled off the great escape, as did the players, as did the supporters. Come on, you Foxes. Another season of Leicester City and Nigel Pearson in the Prem. I love it.
In the Prem. Well, for me, I think the defining thing other than Leicester City was Mr. Steven Gerrard saying goodbye to the Premiership. This is a man who has graced English football since 1998. 503 appearances for Liverpool, 119 goals. I mean, I can never forget the Champions League final when they were 3-0 down. And I was in a bar in Boston, and they gave me one TV. In fact, it wasn't even in Boston. It was some suburb miles away. And there was a bunch of TVs, and they all had Boston Red Sox on. And I said, hey, can I have a TV to watch the Champions League final? And they shoved me in the corner. And I remember watching and gutted that Liverpool were 3-0 down, and then seeing Steven Gerrard get that first goal. And the next thing I know, I'm shouting my head off, cheering Liverpool on and cheering Steven Gerrard on. And by the end of the game, there was five or six TVs that had been switched over to the Champions League final. quite amazing. And then, of course, his England career that never really got to the heights. 114 appearances, 21 goals. But once again, I'll never forget 2001 where England went to Munich, battered the Germans 5-1. And it was Gerrard's goal, the second goal of the game, that really set England on their way, a fizzing drive from 25 yards. It's a shame that he couldn't leave Anfield with a win under his belt, but really has been a remarkable servant to Liverpool and to English football. The likes of him we will never see.
And Nick Webster, may I just say, and I wish Robin Burt was here to share this one, but for me, one of the most special Steven Gerrard moments. I've told you about the FA Cup final parties that we've had with my expat family back in Santa Cruz County every year since I was 5 years old. All meet up, 20 of us, for the FA Cup final. There's people drinking Boddingtons and Guinness at 7 in the morning on the West Coast. It's beautiful. Bangers and beans at halftime. It's a family tradition, and there were two times within the family tradition that I was able to watch Liverpool, that I was able to be there for a Liverpool FA Cup final. One was 2001, the Michael Owen Boy Wonder Show against Arsenal, and the other one was, of course, 2006, Liverpool and West Ham. One of the greatest performances in any cup final that I've ever seen, and just one of the greatest single match performances that I've ever seen in person, on television, even heard legend about. Steven Gerrard on that day in May of 2006 was truly superhuman, and it wasn't just the goals. It was so much other stuff that he did throughout those 120 minutes plus penalties.
Oh, please stop stroking it, all right? Just stop stroking it. That was
that
Nate
one was
Abiraya.
For Birdie. That one was for Birdie. You
the
still
host
like
of
it
the World Soccer Talk radio show, weeknight 6 to 7, Sports Byline, Sirius XM. You can find him on Twitter at Nate WST.
Well played. Well played.
And you can find me on Twitter at Nick Webster. Subscribe via Stitcher, TuneIn, and iTunes. This has been the World Soccer Talk pod. Bye for now.
Well, we got to give one final Stevie G.
Gutted. Gutted. Absolutely gutted. I'm gutted I'll never play in front of these supporters ever again. Gutted. Absolutely gutted.